Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm delighted to have Rodney Shakespeare back. Listeners are familiar with Rodney. We share comments on major world and national issues. Well, national for me in America, national for Rodney, across the pond, as they say. Rodney is in London. I'm in Chicago. So much is going on. We mostly like to focus on the major world issues going on. Oh, there are so many. Rodney, we exchanged emails earlier today. I'm writing about Israel's latest act of aggression, if I can only call it that, flexing its muscle, attacking Syria again. I think literally daring the Assad government to respond. I think it's a thinly veiled scheme. I don't think Syria will accept the bait, but I think it really is a plot to provide a clear-cut pretext for America and NATO and maybe Israel to get involved in a full-scale war on Syria besides what's already going on.
Yes, it's that and something else as well. It should never be forgotten that the this idea of the promised land, which means that the Zionists say that they can go into the land of others, actually encompasses a large part of Israel. That Israel has annexed part of Syria, which is the Golan Heights. It's drilling for oil, but it has formally annexed that. And it part of Lebanon is also in this idea of the promised land. So all the time they treat it as a place to where they can terrify others and kick them out. Going to your other point, which is Syria, it's a really astonishing situation that you find that the UK and the USA are conspiring to fund and to arm. I want none of this. We aren't arming. They are arming their own enemies. It's how that can happen. Of course, it comes from a bankruptcy of policy, because ultimately American and UK policy is Zionist policy. And if you understand that, then you understand how they can get themselves in such a mess that they are arming their enemies. And what's more, doing something bigger than that. They're actually arming the people who will win amongst the rebels. I didn't say they're going to win in Syria, but who will win amongst the rebels, who will become superior, and who will then take their desire for violent overthrow back in the first place to the country where they came from. I refer to the spiritual home, and indeed certainly the financial home of Al-Qaeda, which is Saudi Arabia. So American and UK policy is completely adrift. I think they are probably trying to move towards war in Syria. The problem there is, of course, is that that if they succeed in going to war and succeed in letting Jabhat al-Nusra and al-Qaeda win, then you will end up with the most vicious anti-Israel regime that you could ever conceive of. So you see, you seem to go round in circles, but you do this because American and UK policy is fundamentally bankrupt, is controlled by Zionism, and it ends up with all these contradictions in which they're only serving Zionism's interest, which is to smash all strong Islamic states. And that's the way it works at this moment.
Well, it's absolutely true, Rodney. The power of the Israeli lobby in America, I've written about it a number of times. I've quoted from wonderful books, including by James Petras, who comes on this program all the time, The Power of Israel in the United States, a very important book. I strongly recommend it. And I wrote about Jim's book, and we've certainly discussed it in the past. But there are a lot of tentacles to the Israeli lobby. AIPAC is the best known organization, but there are 52 52 major Zionist organizations in America, and AIPAC is just the tip of the iceberg, even though that's the name that most people recognize. The Zionist Organization of America goes back, I think, over a century now. The Anti-Defamation League goes back about a century. So, and AIPAC is much newer, a vintage around the early 1950s under a different name at its inception, and it should be declared a foreign agent. And during the Kennedy administration, AIPAC's predecessor was ordered to register as a foreign agent in America. Instead of doing that, it changed its name, or it really passed the baton to what became AIPAC over 60 years ago or so. And AIPAC, ever since, has operated illegally as an unregistered foreign agent. It's U.S. law. Any organization representing a foreign country is supposed to register, but not any organization representing Israel, Rodney. That's the way it works in America. And it worked way back when, and it certainly works that way today.
Yes, and of course there's the point, which is, when is the USA going to realize that its interests and Israel's interests can never actually be exactly the same? And by linking themselves inextricably at the moment, they are in fact wrecking America's long-term interests. You've got a most preposterous situation where almost every day America is being, I won't say dragooned, but being cajoled into taking more and more aggressive positions in the Middle East, because that is the way the Americans can say to the, feel that they can control Israel by saying, look, don't worry, we're doing this, there's no need for you to attack. But the truth of the matter is that America has not got the political will to control Israel. Israel is out of control. America is making itself ridiculous by all the time taking on more and more threats, particularly against Iran. The latest one, of course, is in the Persian Gulf, where you've got 30 navies who are going up and down. It's a monstrous exercise designed to show to Israel, don't worry, Israel, you mustn't attack, because you see, we're up here, we are strong, we're prepared to do it. And all this ignores the fact that Israel could easily put the USA straight into war. But the underlying thing is the lack of political will in the USA to say that they will follow American interests and will not follow Israel's interests. And amongst that, Steve, you also need the straight American will to use its military intelligence and gathering powers and its military technology to, if necessary, to knock out every one of those Israeli submarines. Until America does that, I'm afraid Israel will always be the tail wagging the dog. That is to say, Israel will always be controlling American foreign policy. And as regards the Middle East, Israel will be the one which precipitates not just a war, but even an atomic war in the Middle East. The USA should wake up that it has this monster which now controls it, and it's much too dangerous. And in the situation is that America's long-term interests are not being served.
Rodney, that absolutely is true. I wrote about the father of America's nuclear navy, Hyman Rickover. Oh, a good night. He's been gone for a good while now. A number of years ago, he testified before a congressional committee, and he said, if America America or any nuclear power gets involved in a war, it really could become very extended, most likely of a world war nature, something on the order of a world war. Then that nation or those nations involved, if they have nuclear weapons, they'll use them. And Rickover was unequivocal. He said, every time there is a major conflict where you've got powers facing off against each other, they use every single weapon in their arsenal. There has never been a case in the past when that was not true. Certainly was true in World Wars One and Two. And he said, if we ever get to anything like that situation again, what he was really saying is, you can bet it's going to be a nuclear war. And if it's a nuclear war, well, sorry, that's the end of things. It literally could be that bad. Dropping one or two wouldn't end the world. But you start start lobbing these things around like king-size hand grenades, and that's the end of all of us. And that was a man who really understood the power of nuclear power, and I wonder whether he had second thoughts of ever getting involved in it. But he did, and we don't have him around today. He was very honest. There aren't honest people testifying before Congress the way he did. Let me give you one quote, and I'll let you jump back in, Rodney. As far as the power of the Israeli lobby, here's a direct quote from a former former U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman, a man by the name of Admiral Thomas Mora, that's how it's pronounced, from 1970 to 1974. He was head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he said this quote, "I've never seen a president, I don't care who he is, stand up to the Israelis. It just boggles the mind. They get whatever they want. The Israelis know what is going on all the time. If the American people understood what a grip these people have on our government, they would rise up in arms. Our citizens certainly don't have any idea what's going on."
That is indeed true. And I mentioned just now the 13 navies in the Persian Gulf. And there they are, just as I said, trying to say to Israel, don't worry, we're keeping an eye on Iran. But of course, Iran is attacking nobody. And the situation in the Persian Gulf is getting remarkably serious. And it's one in which Israel can precipitate the war. I do have to say a few things on American policy in respect of the Persian Gulf. First of all, America is a country without an embassy in Iran, and that means its mindset is essentially locked in permanent hatred for being booted out of Iran in 1979. And like a spoilt child, the USA is in a condition of stunted development. It is unable to grow up. And secondly, all the time any information it gets out of Iran, it sees it through the prism of spite and ignorance. And it doesn't understand that Iran is politically stable. I mean, the USA is making a complete and absolute fool of itself in respect of the Persian Gulf and in respect of Iran. On the one hand, it is supporting all those vicious autocracies. And on the other hand, the one country which is remarkably democratic, it's the most democratic by far of anything in the Middle East, is Iran, and it is politically stable. The third stupidity is thinking that they can do anything to stop Iran progressing in civilian nuclear energy. They will not succeed. And besides, the America doesn't seem to understand that more and more nations are making quiet agreements with Iran. Indeed, the whole world is now making quiet agreements with Iran. But then the last thing is, of course, that the USA thinks that it can bully Iran, and if it bullies Iran, it will affect the outcome of the next presidential election. Steve, for a start, the USA doesn't even know who the candidates are going to be, but I can tell you straight that the Iranians are 100% united now on this issue of regime change. It's not that there aren't plenty of people in any country who get fed up with the system and its structure and its problems, etc. It's simply that all Iranians now perceive that whether they want to have goodwill towards the USA, and many of them do, they all perceive that the USA is trying to bully them, in some way is trying to create trouble for their presidential election in June, as they think, which happened before, but it was largely contrived. And they are simply not going to bully the Iranians because Iranians are not amenable to being bullied. Now, there's the USA for you. And here, yes, one could say the Zionism is in this because Iran stands up solidly against the endless expansion, the creeping genocide of Zionist Israel. But on this one, Steve, I think you'd have to say more than anything else, it's the USA's mindset, helped, of course, egged along by the UK, which leads to this terrifying misconceptions in respect of Iran. I mean, what does it stem from? Does it stem from a belief that the USA thinks that Iran wants rich poor division, food stamps and war, that his remedy as being something that Iranians want? They don't. I mean, what are they up to? The answer is, it is a completely outdated, arrogant mindset. The USA is not recognizing it's been kicked out of Iraq, it's been kicked out of Afghanistan, it's hashed up Libya, it's in the process of hashing up Syria, and it simply has no understanding and makes no attempt to understanding what is going on in Iran and how a large part of the people perceive it. I can tell you now, Steve, that apart from Canada, Israel, and the USA, there are great question marks now over the views of Europe in respect of the USA and its policy. I'm not going to say they're going to openly spit, but more and more people are questioning the stupid, out-of-date, vicious, malfunctioned mindset of the USA, particularly in respect of Iran. Like some sort of ogre in a fairy tale, the USA seems doomed to behave badly forever in respect of Iran. It really has to grow up. And on balance, I would say that more than anything else, this is the USA's fault. I won't want to say more than the UK. We're in there. But I put the USA in the front line on this one, even more than I would put Israel.
Well, that's encouraging to hear, Rodney. I have not kept up with what is going on behind the scenes, where maybe some European nations are beginning to grumble a little bit to realize they're shooting themselves in the foot by going along with this horrendous anti-Iranian policy. And I agree with you on Iran. No country is perfect. But, Iran, they let people like you and me and many others go on their national television and speak freely about virtually any issue whatsoever that I could never do in America, and I don't think you could do on the BBC in London. BBC has never invited me on. No U.S. Corporate media outlet or so-called National Public Radio or public broadcasting has ever invited me on. I once got into a friendly online debate with an ombudsman for our public broadcasting, their lead news program nightly called The News Hour, and I criticized one of its broadcasts where they had one-sided views. They were absolutely distorted, and I wrote an article about it, and this fellow contacted me. I didn't know who he was. I guess I could have found out who he was, but he contacted me and criticized me. Well, I responded responsibly, and I challenged him to invite me on one of the News Hour programs with some of the usual types they bring on and let me have my say. Well, needless to say, I never got the invitation.
Well, I want to say this. First of all, I would do not get on the BBC and on the main media for the same reasons as you wouldn't. As regards the USA, well, you will well have heard of the Kaiser Report, yeah. Which is a booming, highly popular financial and economic analysis done by a very colorful pair, Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. And I don't believe it is on one single main media station in the USA. It's being picked up right the way around the internet. And what is surprising about it is that Kaiser, whether you agree or not, but I think the fair analysis is to say that he is a sort of a traditional American capitalist, not the present corruption of capitalists, but a tradition. At least that's how he perceives himself. But he's startlingly informed it's the most colorful program that you can imagine. If you don't know anything about finance or economics, you watch it for the sheer fun that goes on that program. And yet not one main American media actually carries that program, a program which is shooting around the world in its popularity. And that tells you how your media is stitched up in the same way as the UK's media. And just following up, Steve, if I may, on the American image, I mean, progressive radio Russia Today, Press TV, many stations coming out of Iranian broadcasting, all of them are having an effect. And you're picking up more and more reasons to see that not only are the main media losing their percentage of viewers and listeners, but politically things, the word is getting out in various respects. And if you take, say, Saudi Arabia, I mean, I don't think there's any intelligent person who doesn't realize that these are corrupt and vicious people. Only 2 or 3 weeks ago, they were proposing to paralyze a man as a punishment. They've since denied it, but nobody believes them because these are the people who whip women, who cut off the heads of Indonesian maids who are being raped. And at the moment, the last one, this is only about 10 days ago, they're actually proposing to crucify a man. This is Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, whose only crime is to ask for the vote. And this is America and the UK. This is your country. This is my country. This is your listeners' country. And if I shout too loud, it'll be some people outside the door will be shouting. It is our countries, and we support a regime which is actually proposing to crucify a man because, you see, they want the most painful death that they can actually think of. This is our policy to support these people. It's utterly shocking, but I say, Steve, thank God we've got the internet, thank God we've got progressive radio, thank God we've got Press TV and Russia Today and those Iranian channels. There's not much else there. I mean, Canada. You have listeners, I'm sure, in Canada. Canada is becoming absolutely stitched up, vicious. You've got three countries together, USA, Israel, and Canada. And they're now being hated. Canada, which used, in my youth, certainly had a colossal reputation as a reasonable, decent country, reasonably independent, trying to do its best for others in the world and also doing its best for itself. Nobody would object to that. And now Canada is being sold out to all these new trade agreements which are taking away all the power of the Canadian Parliament and of the American Parliament and the European Parliaments. Canada is being sold out by that pervert of a Prime Minister. What's his name? Harper, is
Harper,
it?
Stephen Harper.
Harper. Canada is being completely and utterly sold out, and the Canadians don't seem to understand what's happening. Well, there you are.
Indeed, and it really doesn't matter. There is, I'm not certain how many parties there are in Canada. I don't write much about Canadian politics, but there are two main ones. You know, the usual divide, a liberal-conservative, but the so-called liberals in Canada are like the Democrats in America, absolutely hardline and lockstep with American Republicans, and just like New Labour in Britain, Rodney, I would imagine practically indistinguishable from the Tories. And you've got an independent party that I understand has made some great strides. I would hope if they ever manage to get really a foothold in any sense in the British Parliament, I hope they won't change their spots because it might be a breath of fresh air. I mean, that happens. I mean, Britain's Labour Party, if you go back far enough, really did things for British workers. But now, I mean, you get force-fed austerity, the same thing that's happening in America. Canada is just as bad. Right across Western Europe, it's just is bad. I mean, this is horrible stuff. I remember writing about in Canada Brian Mulroney, who was Canadian Prime Minister around the time in the early 1980s. And I remember writing about he went to New York and he gave a speech before an economics club. I believe it was in New York. And his headlined statement was, Canada is open for business. In other words, U.S. corporations, you're welcome to come up and rape and pillage and share the profits with us, and we'll help you exploit the Canadian workers. And it's been all downhill ever since that. And this is going on in America and across Europe, plus all the wars that go on. Horrible, horrible, Rodney.
Okay, let's just stay across my side of the pond for a moment on this UKIP, which stands for UK Independence Party, because something pretty significant is going on. And to understand it, you first have to look at the economic scene, an economic scene which extends, believe you me, across the Atlantic, where you know, and but in particularly in Europe. Now, in Europe, the official government unemployment is 12%. But in country after country, it's 25%. And then when you look at the key demographic, which is young people 18 to 25, you double that. And when you go to, say, Andalusia, which is your most populated part of Spain, the figure has now reached 70%. Now, this is an absolute catastrophe going on. And it's leading, of course, to your riots and your demonstrations and the things getting worse, say, in Greece. But the significant one is because when you get an election, that's your chance and you start to see change. Of course, it's in Italy with Beppe Grillo and the Five Star Movement, which basically is saying a plague on all your houses. But now come across to the UK. The UK is not part of the euro, but it has suffered the depredations of the banking establishment. It suffers the arrogance of the elite, which is only concerned with itself. And it suffers from the two-party system, or effectively the three-party system, which is the Liberals, Labour and Conservative, all of whom don't understand that because debt has built up and because there's the grip of the bankers, we are going downhill. And as a result of all this, is we have got essentially a big protest movement. I don't think it's quite as anti-Europe in strength as you might imagine. The big force pushing it is economics. It's people who've lost their jobs. It's retired people who don't get any interest on their savings. It's the unemployed. It's fear and it's insecurity. That said, it's going to have political consequences. In the local elections, which we've just had, if there was a general election today, the UKIP party would get about 25 or 26% of the votes. But next year, we have the UK elections to the European Parliament, and that's done on a different electoral voting system. It's done on proportional representation. And if you start to have 26% of the vote, something like that, given that there'll be all sorts of parties standing, UKIP almost certainly would be the biggest UK party in the European Parliament. And wait for it. If you get that sort of result and you then get the worsening economic situation, which is certain, then you get a general election in 2015. Now, the UKIP at the moment doesn't have one member of parliament. But given that it's definitely now at 26, and in the by-election, which we had 3 days ago as well, the party came from nowhere. It had absolutely nothing in the constituency. No organization, no members, nothing. It went from there to second in the actual final result. You put that together, and you are looking at a very, very powerful protest. A point you were indicating was, you were saying, well, would there be a new economic and political program coming from that? That is much less certain. The party certainly is anti-Europe, and I would say that it's more than anything else, it's sort of traditional right wing. So I don't think you can expect too much new stuff there, but by goodness me, it's shaking the fruit off the trees or the foundations with the results last Thursday, and it's going to be, I would say, number one party in representing Britain in Europe in the year 2014, which is next time. But don't expect too much in the way of new thinking. It's coming from unease and rather than lack of big new, rather than having new, big new ideas.
Rodney, that's exactly what I fear. And at the same time, if there really was a legitimate party that wanted a huge radical shift in policy, then there'd be probably an alliance of the other dominant parties to prevent it. Look what happened in Italy. You've got a coalition. I haven't taken as close a look at that as I should. But Grillo this independent that got about 25% of the vote, the powers that be were going to make sure that he had no say in running the Italian government. So you've got a coalition of really business as usual types, and they'll basically do what they've been doing all along.
Well, I hear, I think the music's just coming in.
I think it is just coming in.
So we'll come back to that, Steve, if I may, after the break.
Okay, we will take a short break. And we will be right back. Speaking with Rodney Shakespeare, we were discussing a little bit on what happened in Italy. I think Italy has some importance, Rodney, because it shows that even when a significant percent of the voters choose an outlier party headed by this man Grillo, who I think is more bluster than real policy, real radical change in the country, but that's another issue because he's been sidelined now. But hey, you get the powers that be, the embedded power structure that just decides it's gonna continue business as usual. So I just looked up a couple of names. I saw them, but I forgot them. But you got the astonishing reappointment of an 87-year-old conservative by the name of Giorgio Napolitano for another 7-year presidential term. 87 years old, another 7-year term, and he got together with the other dominant parties, and they formed a coalition. It's like the Republicans and Democrats in America forming a coalition, or the Tories and New Labour in Britain. So you've got Berlusconi, Silvio Berlusconi back in his, what's his party? Something with a democratic name, or People of Freedom, or something like that. And the other party is called the Democratic Party. Maybe that's where it's going. I think they both stress a democracy in their party's names, but they absolutely deplore democracy. So you've got them come together under this nominal president for another 7-year term, and it's they claim they want to get away from austerity, but they're lying. They're going to continue the same old policies, and the Italian people will be harmed all the more. And it just goes on and on, and it would happen everywhere. In Britain, if the independents got a foothold, I think they would be shut out unless they were willing to go along with the same rotten system.
I think that analysis is broadly right. And you see, behind that analysis is the intellectual belief that there's this thing called the free market, and it will never have any serious problems because it's in balance and its outcomes are just, and therefore cling on and be loyal to those who are in power at the moment, and everything will get back online. But that is, I fundamentally, all going wrong. Your analysis definitely wins, but except for one thing, is that things are getting worse. I mean, I don't have to talk about the USA, but you are going downhill, and all the moves are being made to an anticipation of civil war. Now, in Europe, every day the figures are actually getting worse. So there is going to come this great crunch. In the case of Italy, on which we were just now, yes, there's a stitch up by the existing sort of structure, and to hold off somebody like Grillo. And there are indeed question marks as to whether Grillo has got the solution, but certainly he's going for one thing, which is to get out of the euro and to repudiate the debt. Now, I actually think that things are going to get so worse that will actually happen. They can no longer solve the problems unless either they turn the European Central Bank into something which is forbidden by treaty not to to be, and which in any case the Germans will oppose, or the euro smashes up, and I think it's going to smash up in any case, whereupon you can go back to national currencies after a period of disorder, and then use your own national banks to start putting out money for things like public capital loans. Money. They're doing what America did in the 1930s, which Canada has done, which Australia has done, New Zealand has done in the past. So I think I hold with your analysis, except that it doesn't work if things really are going to get worse and worse, because that explosion is coming. The truth of the matter is the IMF and the European Commission are not the solution. They are a part of the problem, and we have got to kick them out. And if we, because events are getting so bad, I mean, just look at what's happening in Spain, looks happening in Greece. Look at what has happened in Cyprus. And now, Steve, it's not only that they can take your bank deposits, and those with over 100,000 look as though they've lost 100%. It's being hidden, you know, some of it's being frozen and some of it's being turned into bank shares. But if it's frozen and the bank shares are worth nothing, they are beginning to lose, it looks as though they're losing 100%. And this is now being authorized as a potential solution by the governments and by the national banks for right the way round the Western world. Now, at some point, the public are going to wake up, and you really will have some serious political business. So I'm with you on your view on Italy for the moment, but the bottom line is whether things are getting wrong, and therefore whether the distress will increase and desperate people will end up doing desperate things. And in the UK, UKIP is one of the signs that the British people are starting to get a bit nasty. And I don't think they're going to go back to the conventional parties in 2014 or 2015. We are slipping downhill, and it's as simple as that.
Rodney, I absolutely agree with you. Absolutely agree. And if I didn't mention it in my comments before you jumped in, I should have mentioned that, because I've written it so many times. Literally, things get worse and worse and worse, and it's all covered up with phony data, especially in America. They come up with a jobs report like came out yesterday. What they don't tell you about the jobs report is the jobs that created, who knows what the real number of jobs actually are that were created, because even the U.S. Department of Labor says that the numbers they come out with, which are revised multiple times, if I remember their own statement, that they literally could be on the order of 400,000 either way. So if they say 100 or 200,000 were created, it literally could be minus 200 or 300,000 or maybe a good many more. But in hard times, you can bet it's a good many less. I think things are getting worse. I think push will come to shove. If there's going to be people-led initiatives for change, it's not going to happen in America. Americans are largely asleep. I think it'll happen in Europe. Well, it will travel across the Atlantic and land here as well. I can only hope it will, because there's no other way to change this system that is literally destroying the lives, the welfare, the futures of the great majority of people in America. And several years ago, I quoted from a U.S. Census report that said, and the New York Times actually wrote about this, that said half the households in America either are impoverished or they're bordering on poverty. And the problem with that statement is that the U.S. Census definition of poverty is so grossly outdated that literally you probably have to ratchet that number up to say maybe two-thirds or 75% of the households in America are bordering on poverty. It's a dismal situation. I don't know how people get by. I don't know how they manage. I couldn't live under conditions like that.
Well, you have to assume that that they are living on savings or from borrowing from their family or other members of the family, or that they are drawing in their horns in some way. And this situation can go on, and the whole thing can go on, but all the figures are going in the wrong direction. There just simply is no figure that I've come across which indicates that anything is getting worse. And things like debt, American government debt, for example, there's no way it can reverse itself. And there's simply no way that the jobs can come back in the USA. They've been exported. They've gone. And you just look at your budget attempts. No one has seemed to make any serious dent in something like the American military expenditure, which drains billions and billions out of your economy every single year. So the situation is not capable of being recouped. And when that is so, one gets depressed and doesn't see the big change coming. But it will come, Steve. It will suddenly come. And it will become from all the time you see people are waking up. I mean, the Cyprus situation has alerted everybody everywhere as to how serious the situation. And because it was Cyprus and it was the Russians who were losing their money, all this sort of thing. But the actual realities are going to be brought home, and they are being brought home, and there's going to be something big this summer. Absolutely certain of it. If I can just comment on the gold price in respect there, one of the extraordinary things is that as money is being printed left, right, and center, Japan, UK, and in the USA, where you're on $85 billion a month, that money is purely going into the banking system, and from there, either into bonuses or into the stock market. It's having no effect at all. And at some stage, you go on doing this, and you're having no effect, you do more and more of it. And yet, the gold price has gone back. And that tells you, and it is not believed, it is certain that Mrs. Watanabe in Japan and Mrs. Wang in China are buying gold up left, right, and center. And deliveries of physical gold are no longer possible. So you've got absolutely unheard of situation. And the only explanation is the authorities are panicking. And they're panicking and they are selling naked shorts on gold. And of course, when that one blows, it will bring down the system. So all these things you look at are extraordinary, almost unheard of, and they are building, unfortunately, to what looks like a great big collapse. But keep your eye on the gold, and remember it has two parts. There's physical gold, where the demand is increasing, and huge shifts and purchases are being made towards the east. And then a market which is 100 times larger, in which banks like JP Morgan act as the agents of the American government. And that market is purely paper, and anyone who holds paper is not going to get that paper, not going to get actual gold. And there's one other aspect of all this, of course, the gold in the Fort Knox in America, or wherever you keep it, has long ago gone, because you can't even return Germany's gold. So the whole thing in the gold market is going to blow up at some point, but it will blow up as part of the bigger economic collapse, because they have no solution to it. It goes on and gets worse and worse.
Rodney, one of my favorite quotes comes from the economic advisor during the Nixon administration, Herb Stein. I think he was head of Nixon's Council of Economic Advisors. A terrific quote. It's been restated several ways, but it basically goes, "What can't go on forever won't." As simple as that. And it's true.
Yeah, the version of what goes up has to come down. Well, yes, indeed. And I do think all the evidence is that is happening. And you see, you've got no new idea about that. Nothing is coming out of the Conservative Party, which is new. Nothing out of the Labour Party. And the intellectual paralysis seems worse in the left wing than it is even on the right wing. Now, Steve, there's just one other subject which I'd like to ask you to comment on. You may be fed up with it, but to satisfy my curiosity, what happened in the Boston bombing? I've got my own view of it, but you're much closer. Give me a little summary, will you?
Oh, I wrote so many articles on it, Rodney. one of the articles that I wrote, and I simply reflected on what's happened in the past outside of Boston, but the FBI in America literally is responsible, or was responsible, if not for all, for the great majority of so-called terror plots. And you could go back as far as you want to, as long as the FBI has been in existence many, many decades ago, and you could cite chapter and verse. And every now and then, there's a special smoking gun that is revealed. And there was a big one several years ago in Los Angeles, where one of their so-called informants, one of the people they hire to infiltrate Muslim communities and mosques and so on, this guy blew the whistle on the FBI, but the members of the mosque that he tried to infiltrate to arouse members to get involved in violent acts, they were so upset about what he did that they literally filed a formal complaint with the FBI office in Southern California that hired him. But something went awry between him and his handlers at the FBI, and he blew the whistle, and he went public, and he explained the dirty scheme that the FBI tries to pull. Well, this was only one example of what goes on all the time. Innocent people are entrapped, which is a lawless procedure, to get themselves involved in some manner or means in something they never conceived, never imagined, never would have gotten involved in committing a crime, but the FBI manipulates them in whatever clever ways that they do it, and they bring them up to some point where they can blow the whistle on them and say, aha, we caught them before they planned to do A, B, or C. Well, the Boston situation, I think, was exactly the same thing. These two brothers were set up. I don't think they ever planned to do anything, except in the Boston case, they let a violent act occur. I think the FBI and the Obama administration and whoever else wanted a mass casualty event. I call it a mini 9/11. So they let it go that far. It was not accidental, I believe, that it happened on the commemoration of America's Patriot Day. It happened on the 15th of April. Patriot Day is the 19th, but a 1968 U.S. law changed most federal holidays to be celebrated on Mondays. So Monday was the 15th. This happened then. It was at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, a spot I know well because I grew up in Boston, and it got lots of headlines. It's still getting headlines in the American media. But I don't think these guys, all the official stories we've heard about this, I think this is official, concocted, major media, official Washington, FBI, whatever. I think these are stories. We've yet to hear a single word from the one surviving brother. I don't know what shape he's in. He was shot I don't know how many times. We've yet to hear a single word from him. We probably won't hear a single word from him. So we've only gotten one side of the story, and I think it has so many pockmarks in it that it just does not hold water. I don't believe these brothers are guilty of anything except maybe being foolish enough to get themselves snared into an entrapment scheme, and then the older brother being murdered in cold blood. He tried to surrender. The FBI wouldn't let him surrender. They murdered him in cold blood, and the younger brother apparently survived. I don't know why the FBI didn't murder him too, but he survived, at least so far. I haven't heard anything about him dying. But again, I don't think we'll hear a word from him in public. And again, we'll only get the one side, and I think the one side is just full of bald-faced lies. And this goes on all over and over again. One more thing, and I'll let you jump back in. I've written many, many articles of Americans, mostly Muslims, mostly men, a couple of lawyers who defended the wrong clients, who got themselves snared the same way. In case of the lawyers, they were gone after by authorities for defending clients that Washington wanted convicted. In the case of the Muslims, they were entrapped, or they simply were targeted to be labeled falsely terrorists or conspiracists with the terrorism. I have yet to find a single individual, and I wrote about them in detail. I would guess on the order of five or six dozen of these people, mostly Muslims. I have yet to find a single person guilty of anything they were charged of. I absolutely believe that these two brothers fall in the same category.
Well, as regards, first of all, the younger brother, I've seen a picture of the side of the boat in which he was hiding, and it's riddled with bullets. And clearly they put in all the bullets for the intention of killing, but didn't, in fact. He was hiding slightly differently, or the rest of it. But it's pretty clear to me that they killed the elder brother,
yes,
and they attempted to kill the younger brother. Now, looking at the case more widely, it's also clear that it goes in the pattern of, I think, all the other terrorist incidents in the USA. And the pattern is this, is that information of what is happening does come to the authorities. There's no doubt about it. Then they then either control it, or they encourage it, or they ensure that it happens because they want the event to happen. In the case of 9/11, we know there are 90 issues there. Tower number 7 is the big one. They wanted it to happen so that they could, in fact, declare a war. In the case of, was it the Christmas Day bomber, they actually put him on the plane. And they filmed it actually on the plane. They were sitting with a video camera going, probably looking straight at the man as he undid his underpants and tried to set light to the thing. And they did this so that they could achieve an aim, which was, of course, to introduce all those scanning machines. And in the case of this one, there's no doubt about it that they are moving towards a sort of civil war fascist government. They want to keep the USA in a permanent state of fear. And by that, you can take their guns, you can shut down the internet, you can arrest them and put them into FEMA camps and all the rest of it. Now, that's the purpose behind it, this idea that these... And the other thing about it is, if you look at all those men going around carrying black rucksacks in the actual scene, I mean, they are always the same pattern. There's always a drill going on when these events actually happen. The pattern is there. It's pretty clear. They know what's going on. Sometimes it gets out of hand and has consequences which they don't intend, because if you are aware of something and you are helping it along, that doesn't mean to say that you completely control it and its consequences. But they know and they want these things to go on because that achieves their bigger purpose, which is to put America under fascism.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. It's a pretext to continue the war on terrorism, to continue imperial wars. It makes it easy for Obama to attack Syria if he decides to do it full-blown. You could just declare a threat to national security and get the American public to go along with it. I didn't mention it in my previous comments that in the Boston bombings, a Blackwater-type organization called Clarity International, maybe as many as 10 of their people were on the scene, right at the finish line, on the side of the street, where the bombs exploded, and then before they exploded, they shifted to the other side of the street. The FBI showed up post-haste. It was all a rigged scheme. They knew what was going on, and they just pulled it off like a Hollywood script.
Yes, yes. Now, Steve, very quickly then, you did actually say that if Obama declares America's interests are at stake, how can America's interests be at stake in respect of Syria? Syria hasn't got any weapon that can challenge America in any way at all. What you have got is American policy controlled by Israel, and Israel's interests might be at stake in respect of Syria. But let us just have a quick, we've only got a few minutes left, very quickly, let's look at what happens if there is a war in Syria. What is Russia's position going to be? I mean, the Russians are being pretty quiet, but I believe that Obama is going to meet Putin, but I can't see that Russia is going to give permission for a war in Syria. And indeed, the Russians may be quietly preparing themselves to shoot down any sort of plane that gets anywhere near. And we know that Israel has put a plane into Syria in the last 2 days and to shoot up something. But we also know that on another occasion, a Turkish allegedly reconnaissance plane flying in very fast and low into the Syrian coastline was shut down with remarkable alacrity and efficiency by a Russian-controlled missile battery. you know, you look at the Syrian situation. Yes, there's going to be a false flag, a gas attack. Very quickly on that, the Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra rebels have put out videos and saying they were going to attack. The Syrian government has no interest at all in using gas, because you get the situation of giving an excuse to the Americans. Sarin is something which can be relatively easy manufactured. It was manufactured in Japan in 1994 and 1995 and used on the subway. The ones who have said they're going to use gas and who have used gas, and there's no even evidence this time that it was even sarin. There's no doubt about it. The evidence such it is it was the rebels who are doing this. But they are monstrous. These people are throat slitters, they are head choppers, and they are gas chokers. And America is supporting them and going to go to war on their behalf. And then what happens if after the war's over? Who will be in control? Why does America think that the people that it wants will be in control? It kicks out Assad and his proposals. Does it really think that the so-called moderate Free Syrian Army will be in charge instead? Nonsense, Steve. They will have put in something even grimmer and more vicious than was the Taliban in Afghanistan in the year 2001. But that's America for you. But so the war, well, it won't even achieve America's aims, will it?
Doesn't seem so. It'll be total instability, violence. It'll be a situation like in Libya right now. Libya is a combination charnel house, an absolute violent country from end to end across the northern tier of the country. I mean, this is just horrible. And literally, I mean, the Israeli lobby has a lot to do with what's going on again. And the final result of this can only be more harm. But at the same time, if Syria goes down, the next target is Iran. We could see the whole region go up, and indeed, the question I ask myself all the time is, what will China and Russia do?
Well, at some stage, they're going to have to say, thus far and no further. And I would have thought that the red line for Russia would be actually Syria. I mean, they'll be putting in arms left, right, and center, I think, at this moment.
Oh, indeed. We are out of time, Rodney. I look forward to getting you back next month. This is not going away in a hurry. I imagine it'll be boiling when we come back next month. But many, many thanks. I'll shoot you an email, and I'll just remind listeners, join us again tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Always make it a regular habit. These are the kind of things that you need to know. And when you know them, you need to tell other people, because the bottom line is, if we don't change things, they're never going to change. They're only going to get worse. Join us tomorrow.